Willie P is in a building. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com, and the radio.com app. Halfway home on a Saturday. Hope you're enjoying yourself on it. Sun has come out here in Midtown after a little spout of rain that we had. It's just great to be back on the radio with you guys. Great to have the local lineup back and better than ever. Nick Kale is going to take you through 4 o'clock through 7, and then we'll get ready for Five Stripes football tonight. Atlanta United Soccer taking on Nashville SC. Again, a full day of Falcons coverage coming up tomorrow. Sam and Greg have you from 6 until 9. I'll be on with Hugh Douglas 9 to 11. And then the Falcons Radio Network pregame show with Chris Goforth, Harry Douglas takes you up until Wes and Dave at 1. And then afterwards, Thomas Mott has you for the Falcon flyover, your calls and your comments to what hopefully we're talking about is the Falcons' victory over the Seahawks tomorrow, leading you up to Sunday night football tomorrow evening. So full slate of great stuff to bring you here over the next 2 days as football is totally back in full swing. We'll get back into some more college football later on in the show and also talk a little bit about what's going on with our Five Stripes, react to some of the stuff that Jason Longshore said, and also talk some more Braves with Kelly Kroll later on this hour. Fox Sports Braves reporter is going to join us at 2:40. Sean Newcomb was called up today. Robbie Erlin designated for assignment. Looks like Cole Hamels will be back Wednesday or Friday. They're kind of determining whether or not to use Hamels on Wednesday in the series finale against the Orioles or possibly Friday in New York against the Mets. Same thing be said as well for Max Fried, looking like he will be back no later than that final game against the Orioles as well. So good news on that front for the Braves, but still trying to find some starting pitching as they did not look good once again yesterday. We'll see whether or not they're able to find it tonight. They take on the Washington Nationals as a 6:05 start in Washington tonight. It'll be interesting to see how Ian Anderson has rebounded after his first real struggle outing last time out after two strong starts against the Yankees and Red Sox. Last just 3 innings in that game on Labor Day against Miami. We'll talk some Falcons here. Of course, you very, very, very welcome to join us on the Salmon Brothers Diamond text line, 404-741-0929. That's also the phone number to get in touch with me, Willie P. I am on Twitter, at Willie P. Style. Dan Quinn said something on Dukes and Bell this week that I found very extraordinary. And again, I don't know if it was just him with a throwaway line and trying to maybe spin it in a positive direction when talking about the rookies, but we've talked all about whether or not the COVID-19 effects on the season were all going to be negative, whether it was teams lacking an identity, teams lacking physicality, and obviously when it comes to new players, rookies and otherwise, struggling to adjust to their new systems. Well, here's what Dan Quinn had to say about working with this rookie class, a rookie class that he admits will have a lot of players playing key roles for them this upcoming season.
They had a challenging time to get it all in because they had to do it all online. But one maybe silver lining was how strongly they did learn and put the time in, because when we got here into camp, there were very few busts in terms of assignment, alignment, because you can tell they had put so much work in. Then it was a matter of, all right, how quickly can they react and make full speed decisions based on a coverage or a changing, part of the defense. So those were the things to see how quickly they could come into view. And so for a number of the rookies, they were able to adapt pretty quickly.
I'm not going to try to make a generalization, but I will say this, This is not just a Dan Quinn thing. This is more of a generalization. NFL head coaches, while being forthright is not in their nature, they are genuinely a lot more forthright than college football coaches because of the availability of things like tape and just the inevitability that happens and how you're judged in this game. It's a lot easier for them to be more forthright than, say, a lot of college coaches are. I feel like a lot of college coaches just flat out tell lies just because they don't feel like they have to tell the truth. And, you know, they'll say a player is doing well, and then you don't see them on the field. Like, or vice versa. They'll say a player is not doing well, and then all of a sudden you see him start. Like I feel like a lot of them just tell lies, because it goes to the same type of mentality that exists in that game that has coaches afraid to release a depth chart or an injury report or have any kind of Ross Dellinger talked about the transparency when it comes to even things like COVID tests. There are some coaches that are saying they don't want to release COVID testing because it might have a competitive disadvantage. There's more paranoia involving college coaches than there is when talking about NFL head coaches. So that's why I think Dan Quinn is not blowing, you know, hot air here. The fact that we've seen some of the video and talked to people who have been out at camp, including our own Jarvis Davis and Shanitra Batiste, they say that A.J. Terrell has impressed and looked the part. Marlon Davidson, despite being out for a lot of camp, when he has had his name called, has shown the physicality. Matt Hennessy has gotten first-team reps. Michael Walker had a fantastic scrimmage. And Jalen Hawkins is somebody who's going to be a very key piece on special teams. And, of course, Sterling Hoffrichter is contributing as well, earning the starting punting job. So it's not completely out of the realm of possibility that this particular period and the increased instruction that they were able to give these guys that they normally would not have been able to do, the increased instruction outside of the field actually made them more prepared to enter their first NFL camp. Now, that's not to say there's not going to be busts, especially when it comes to facing someone that's not your own jersey. We talk about that a lot, regardless of the level that there is. And you know, this is the one area where the NFL is going to be like everybody else. There are no preseason games for college football or high school football. There are preseason games in the NFL, and while everything is kind of vanilla, it does take it up a notch when you're seeing somebody who's not in your own color jersey and you have to react in a different way. I know a lot of times when it comes to guys that we've talked to, you get to a point in the preseason where you almost kind of know what's coming from your own team. And I'm wondering if some of that read and react stuff will be a little bit harder for guys on the defensive side like Terrell, Walker, and Davidson when he gets himself on the field fully acclimated. I'm wondering if that's a harder adjustment period for those guys than, say, it would be for Matt Hennessy. But keep this in mind, too. A.J. Terrell had a lot of great college tape. People look at his game, and I'm not going to say you throw out completely what happened against Ja'Marr Chase and LSU, but think about what happened the year before that in the national championship game against Alabama. He was one of the real big keys for that Tiger team blowing out Alabama, a team that we thought might have been the best college football team in this generation. And they got waxed, largely due to his efforts on defense. Here's Dan Quinn talking to Dukes and Bell about how A.J. Terrell has developed in his rookie season.
The guys that he faces every day, it is as challenging as you can make it, and he is 100% down for it. So they've got terrific receivers, you know, with Lockett and Metcalf, and they added Dorsett, you know, during the offseason. But we've got a crew that, you know, that they have to match up with every single day. And so doing that every day and finding whether it's one-on-one, you know, in regular team periods in 2 minutes, whatever it takes, that kind of interaction between players. You've seen Hulu and Cal reaching out to the DBs and vice versa and questions and spending time together. So they've been tested, let's put it that way, with AJ.
And I do feel like the secondary as a whole is the strongest unit on this football team. When you think about the fact that you have what's basically amounting to a 4-2-5, that tells me that they're more confident in bringing Keanu Neal into the box on run plays than they would have been going out and getting another linebacker, someone to replace Devondre Campbell. And I'm going to say it right now, Devondre Campbell is the one guy who I look at and I say, if they don't rush the passer this year, it's not just on the fact that Dante Fowler is performing like Vic Beasley. It's because they didn't go out and get a guy who I think was big, not only in the pass rush, but in the coverage game. But I do believe that Fowler is going to get to the quarterback. And I do feel like if Tack McKinley doesn't get to the quarterback, they're going to put somebody there who can, whether it's Charles Harris, whether they bump out Marlon Davidson and keep Tyler Davison, no relation, on that offense, on that defensive line. They're going to find some way to get something out of that DN spot that's opposite Dante Fowler. And the one thing that my man Jarvis Davis says to me, and if there's one person who knows anything in this city other than maybe Chuck Smith about the tactical nature of playing defensive line, it's the man from Albany State, my man Jarvis Davis. Dante Fowler is not a one-trick pony like Vic Beasley was. He has a variety of moves. That spin move hits different than Vic Beasley just kind of sitting there and playing coverage or trying to speed rush off the end and getting caught upfield. He knows how to bull rush. He knows how to spin inside and outside and use a variety of different ways and swims and jumps and jives to get himself to the quarterback and get home. And because of that, you now have a situation when it comes to the Falcons where you now have a threat. You have somebody you have to game plan for. The offense on the other side has to circle somebody in that realm. They have not had to do that other than maybe Grady Jarrett on that defensive line over the last couple of years. And so because of that, you now have a situation when it comes to the Falcons where you're not going to put as much stress on that back four or back five. And you might have the ability, when it comes to it, to get the quarterback out of the pocket and under duress. And maybe you commit those turnovers and have the ability to change the field position, change the game in your realm. I'm really, really excited to see what this Falcon defense can do, because over the last eight games of the season, they were a lot different. It was a much different group over the last eight games of the season. Is that rooted in reality? I don't know. Is the part of the team that showed up in the first 8 weeks still part of their DNA? It's hard to tell. But I do believe that when it comes down to it, this team will not have the kind of breakdowns that they had at the beginning of last year. Does that lead to wins? That all is yet to be revealed to us. 404-741-0929. Shout out to Gator Pilot Rob, or Gator Pilot Rob, who's listening on the Solomon Brothers Diamond Text Line. Bob, I should say, not Rob, joining us on the Solomon Brothers Diamond Text Line and also on the radio.com app, where you can get on-demand segments. If you missed College Football Game Time earlier with Chuckery, Randy, and Chris Goforth, fantastic conversation about the college football game earlier today. And anything you might have missed on our 92.9 The Game original programming, it's all available for you at the radio.com app. Five Stripes have looked kind of ugly last couple of games. We try to dissect what's true and what's not about them, and also get you set up for what is a college football day for half of the Georgia college football watching fan base for the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets. That's next. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and radio.com. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com, radio.com app. Willie P is in the building. College football underway for the ACC and the Big 12, though not the Big 10. Although if you really wanted to, you could have watched a real Big 10 classic. 1992 Rutgers-Virginia Tech game. Just so you remember, Rutgers was not in the Big 10 at that time, nor was Virginia Tech ever in the Big 10. That was when they both were in, I believe, the old Big East. So I'm so salty. The Big Ten just, and we talked about this with Ross Dellinger a couple hours ago or last hour. It continues to be embarrassing. And I'll sum it up by this. You know, I know my limitations. My hand is up, and I said this to open up the show. Look, I try to do the absolute best when it comes to getting the information that I want. I'm not somebody who likes to live in fear. It's not the full Mike Bell, but I'm somewhat close. But I take precautions. I wear a mask. I limit my social interactions. I limit my exposure in the community. But I'm also a realist, and when it comes down to it, teams are still playing games. Like, baseball's playing. Basketball's playing. Hockey's playing. The only question I have when it comes to the college side of things, when it comes to the college football, is are you going to have college students acting responsibly? And we're seeing different reports out. You know, Georgia Tech's got 33, or not Georgia Tech, Georgia Southern, I should say, beg your pardon, has 33 players on their squad that either will not dress because of a positive COVID test, contact tracing, or suspension. That's not something you want to see. And that's a hard thing to swallow. So be that as it may, that's why I had certain reservations about there being a college football season. Yet, when it comes down to it, schools in the ACC and the SEC and the Big 12 have done their part to try and act as responsibly as possible. No, a lot of the rosters aren't going to be as full. The stadiums aren't going to be as full. It might not be tailgating, but for people who want to go, again, it's in my realm, it's always like if you don't feel comfortable going, and I'll tell you right now, I don't. But allow those who want to have the ability to do it safely. Like 25% of Arrowhead Stadium the other night looked pretty bare, looked pretty easy to social distance there. My buddy Greg Doyle, who's covering the Notre Dame-Duke game, their capacity was around 15,000 in Notre Dame Stadium. And I've been at that stadium. 25% of that stadium is not a lot of people. It's about 15K. And he says it might be a third of that even there right now, about 10, 11 minutes to get to game time in South Bend. So that's kind of only where I'm at. And that's the part of the Big Ten situation that I've never been able to wrap my head around. It's like, okay, you've got these ADs and coaches who want to play, and then you have these chancellors who, and I believe Andy Staples was the guy who put it the best. It's like, you can't be the Ivy League and the SEC all at the same time here. Like, there has to be some sort of practicality that comes into play here. And I'm not even saying anything that, you know, is to be considered reckless here. Like, what makes the difference between late October and November and December and January? If it's just down to testing, according to some of the reports, they've already sutured up that part of it. Well, then what's the issue? And the fact that there's been a constant everyday string of just this drama coming from the Big Ten, it's just not what it looks like. North Carolina is driving against Syracuse. It's 10-6 as they approach the end of the third quarter, and possibly an upset brewing in Ames. 2 minutes left to go in the third quarter. Don't sleep on the Louisiana Raging Cajuns. 17-14 leading Iowa State. Oi. I have a very, very good friend of mine who was a walk-on lineman for Iowa State, and I sent him a text about an hour ago. I said, fam, get your stuff together over there in beautiful Ames, Iowa. By the way, Ames, Iowa is neither beautiful nor appealing. I can just tell you that from experience, having gone to college in the Big 12, or at least a school that was in the Big 12 while I was there. Trips to Ames, Iowa were not fun. Iowa City, much better place to party than Ames, Iowa. I can say that from personal experience, especially for some of those night games that I saw up at Kinnick Stadium. Georgia Tech kicks off about an hour and change from right now with their opening game against Florida State. And a lot of the conversation around Georgia Tech has been rather circular. Jeff Collins in his second season, only 3 wins a year ago. A lot of people are saying a lot of the same things. They're starting to get players that fit an ACC program now. They're players who are in camp now that more look the part. And those who have stuck around, or at least the ones that Jeff Collins has kept around, are starting to look physically like the specimens that belong in this conference, as opposed to the type of athlete that Paul Johnson was recruiting. Now, I do think that Georgia Tech has a very unique opportunity here, and a lot of it has to do with the fact that the Big Ten isn't playing. The fact that Georgia Tech has the academic, I don't want to say restrictions, because that's the word that Josh Pastner likes to use. And every time I have a conversation with Pastner about this, I just laugh, because I figure out teams figured out ways in the past to figure out how to recruit at Georgia Tech amidst that. Like, I don't like using that as a crutch or as an excuse. But the fact remains is that if you have athletes of an academic caliber in Big Ten country, you can use the draw of not only Atlanta, but the ACC as a draw if you're in Big Ten country. Like Jeff Collins, if I'm Jeff Collins, I know you can't send guys out anywhere right now, but I am doing a big recruiting push in the Northeast. I know you want to keep the people who are talented enough in Atlanta here, and you want to keep the guys who are in state here, but if I'm Jeff Collins, I'm very much looking forward to seeing what exactly he does to try and further this program and get more of those talents. And maybe it comes down to getting guys who are in the Big Ten right now who are not playing. Like, I'm not saying you can go in and totally, like you would almost do in the NFL, spark a trade, if you will, or get guys to get kind of sold off there. But I do believe that there's talent to be had, and the academic nature of Georgia Tech and the footprint of player that is currently not playing right now in Big Ten country, and even in the Pac-12 too, to an extent. Think Stanford, those kind of players. You can get those kind of guys and play at Georgia Tech. Now, you still need dudes. You need guys who the Clemsons are getting, guys who the North Carolinas are getting, guys who the Florida States are getting. And again, the game today is so intriguing because of the fact that you have a Georgia Tech squad that appears to be trying to take a step forward, and Florida State, who by no fault of its talent, really just kind of looked discombobulated all last year under a program that had a lack of direction under Willie Taggart. So keeping in mind that there's still probably some dissension inside that locker room because Mike Norvell hasn't exactly been somebody who was fully embraced by that roster, given some of the reports that we've read coming out of Tallahassee. You have that element, and you have the element of the fact that Georgia Tech is going to look largely brand new. You don't know who the quarterback's going to be. Is it either Sims or Graham? That Jeff Collins was on our air Tuesday and very, very coy about that. But you have rising upperclassmen at wide receiver. You've got three interior linemen who are going to be upperclassmen too, projected by Phil Steele's college football depth chart, and a lot returning on defense, 10 starters. So looking at that picture, I know they were 3-9 a year ago, but they wouldn't have him around if Jeff Collins didn't feel like he could compete. Now, when it comes to Georgia in a couple of weeks, a lot of people are nervous, especially after Newman's opt-out. I was probably more high on JT Daniels than anybody else was, just based on the fact that I feel like Daniels fit more of what Todd Monken wanted to do with this offense. Not that you couldn't win with Jamie Newman. Not that I wasn't excited to see a little bit more innovation from the Georgia offense. Maybe a little bit of the type of stuff that the Ravens are doing with Lamar Jackson, some more read option stuff. Mobility with the quarterback is never a bad thing, especially if you prove you can also sling it, which by all accounts and by the accounts that I've seen with Newman when he was at Wake Forest, he can. But Daniels profiles as somebody who you can put in the air raid type system that Todd Monken has ran elsewhere. Does that mean that Georgia Tech's going to look like, or that the University of Georgia rather is going to look like Texas Tech? Absolutely not. They're still going to run the football. There's a lot of pressure on a guy like Zeus, Zamir White, and James Cook to further the type of running game that you had here over the last couple of years. But I do also feel like there needs to be a better balance, and there needs to be some real, I guess when you call it from the standpoint of Kirby Smart, some loosening of the locks, if you will, on this Georgia offense. And I'm very curious to see what it looks like, not only against Arkansas, but against some of the elite of the SEC that they'll play, including that game in the third week of the regular season when they take on Alabama. 404-741-0929 is how you get in touch with me, Willie P, on Twitter, at Willie P Style. We'll come back, talk some Braves with Kelly Kroll, Fox Sports South, Fox Sports Southeast, as we get ready for the Braves and Nationals tonight inside D.C., game 3 of a 4-game set. We'll ask her what the latest roster move for the Braves rotation means about the week ahead when it comes to the Braves and their starters. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com, and the radio.com app. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com, on the radio.com app. Willie P is in the building on a Saturday. It's so great to be back with you. It's been a long, long ride, but we made it. Football season on the horizon. Full weekend lineup is back and installed here at 92.9 The Game. And again, thanks to the folks involved to make it happen. It allows me to get some more opportunities to catch up with my good friend, former college classmate, and Fox Sports Braves reporter Kelly Kroll joins us on the WadeFord.com hotline. I know we've done this a couple of times, Kelly, but never just the two of us. Appreciate it, as always, for taking some time on a very busy day, I'm sure, for you.
Yeah, this is like going back, isn't it, Will? Like, just getting to chat sports, talk it up, and I'm really glad you guys had me on this afternoon. I appreciate it.
We've had plenty of those chats, and whether it was in the KOMU sports room or otherwise. The bullet seems to have been dodged by the Braves with Ronald Acuña last night fouling the ball off the ankle. Seems like Brian Snitker not too concerned, though, because it looks like it's just a bone bruise.
Yeah, he appeared to be optimistic for sure. And it's funny, we're talking about our college days. You know me, I've always been like this hopeless optimistic. And so last night when this happens, I've got, you know, Paul Bird sitting next to me and our camera guys and our audio guys, and it's just this, you know, gasp, and everybody's holding their breath, and right away, oh, if he can't put weight on it, it's got to be broken. And then a few innings later, we get the news that x-rays were negative. And I'm sitting there thinking, guys, this is such a bad analogy, but, like, we've all stubbed our toes, and sometimes it's worse than ever. And
yes,
you can't put weight on it, right? Like, you're literally crying in that moment. And that's a horrible analogy to try and compare what happened to Ronnie last night. But, like, that's kind of what I was thinking because of the optimism in me. Is I was like, no, he's going to be fine. He's going to be fine. He just really hit himself really hard. I can understand not putting weight on it. But, yeah, a few innings later, Braves country could kind of exhale and feel like, okay, I am not sure we're going to see him in the lineup tonight, honestly. I mean, going against Corbin, who is tough enough as it is, it'd be great to have him in there. But if there's any swelling still or soreness, which you would imagine there probably is, you got to give the guy one more day or two just to kind of get himself right and be feeling, but just with the way he plays, be feeling 100%. I think that's my opinion. I hope we see him, and we certainly will get the lineups here shortly. But yeah, I just think, like you said, they dodged a huge bullet because you got to have this guy healthy to do what they're trying to do.
I don't mean to call it a carousel, Kel, but it has kind of been a carousel when it comes to the starting rotation for the Atlanta Braves here lately. It will turn with Robbie Erlen getting designated for assignment. Sean Newcomb has been brought back up. What have you heard about what Nuke's been able to do at the alternate site?
Yeah, you know, those reports are really hard. No one's down there, really, to pass any information along as far as just, what we hear from Snit is that he has improved and that he's found control, found the strike zone a little bit more, had some success down there in the simulated games that they're having. But it's just really hard. That's why this season, honestly, it's disappointing that the minor leagues weren't able to get some sort of normalcy going as well, because these guys really – what's going on in Gwinnett and for every camp, every alternate camp right now, it's just, you can't simulate a game and against your own teammates, guys that you clearly, you're not going to pitch inside against your own teammates. You don't want to risk like hurting one of them. So it's just tough to really know what's going on and where guys stand until you get them back here. And that's what they're going to do with Sean Newcomb. I think what we're seeing here is that they saw enough of Robbie Erlen to kind of understand that this wasn't going to be a guy that they could really rely on for the next couple weeks. And hey, you're just trying to catch lightning in a bottle at the right time, whether it's with Sean Newcomb, whether it's the next guy maybe we're seeing is Fulton Nevich. I don't know. They've talked about possibly bringing him back, but the guy I'm most excited about, and yes, I'm biased because I covered him for a couple years in Chicago, but I have always been a huge Cole Hamill fan just because I've watched the way this guy goes about his work every single day. And so even had he never stepped foot on the field this year, which would have been a travesty, but he would have been influencing guys like Soroka, Freed, Anderson going tonight. I've seen him talking to those guys and sitting next to them during games, and that is invaluable. But to know the work that Cole has put in to get back to where he is right now, we're going to see him next week. I think he's going to go probably Wednesday, that final game in Baltimore, and then Max Fried will start the series against the Mets. I think that's kind of what Alex laid out before, and just knowing that Cole threw his last sim game yesterday, that would be exactly 5 days. We're talking Wednesday. And then it allows him three starts to sort of stretch himself out and really be in a place where he can make an impact postseason. And the way that lines up, he'd be pitching in game two. So I am super excited for Braves fans to hopefully see what is a guy who is a championship caliber hit the field, and he is going to do the difference with Cole Hamels versus like a Sean Newcomb, right? Well, is that this is a guy who will figure it out when things aren't going well. He is, he might give up a run or two, but he is going to find a way to keep you in the game. That is what the best do. And he, in my opinion, is one of those guys. He will fight his way through outings that aren't perfect and keep this team with the offense that just every night finds a way to come back. He's going to keep a team in there. So that's why I'm excited for Cole. And then, yeah, Max Fried, from what we heard, is also doing well. I think that, you know, they're really optimistic that he only misses one start. So you get Fried back. And let's see. Let's see what Ian Anderson can do tonight. And then you got three guys that maybe you're feeling a little bit better rolling out here with this insanely good offense.
Kelly Kroll, Fox Sports Braves reporter, joining us on the WadeFord.com hotline. It is Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Willie P here with you on a Saturday. You kind of covered Hamels. I do want to look forward tonight for Anderson. We really saw his first adversity in that game that you all had on YouTube on Labor Day Monday. How do you expect him to respond to that with his first start since then tonight?
I think we're going to see a really good Ian Anderson tonight. My takeaway from that was, and for those that were able to see it or not, it kind of, the wheel fell off the track when he made that error, right? Thrown over to first, he airmails it. But prior to that, he looked good. He looked sharp in the first couple innings. And then it just fell apart when he did that. And I thought to myself, you know, that's bizarre. Clearly we asked him about it and he admitted in a way, which I think this kind of goes to show you sort of the maturity of Ian Anderson, that he said, I just really wasn't able to slow the game down after that. I wasn't able to calm myself down, and it was a learning experience. He went into his side sessions this week. He said he really worked on his secondary stuff and the put away pitch and just, but it's back to basics for him tonight, getting ahead in the count, which really he's done a good job of. We kind of went back and looked at some of those numbers. Ian's been good getting ahead in the count and then, trusting his defense. And I think that's tough on any young pitcher when they come up in a way. Because you think you got to do it all, right? Like, you think you got to get every guy out on your own. And what I think he has picked up on very quickly by watching guys like Max Fried is he's got one heck of a defense up the middle, really all over for him. So it's okay. It's okay to pitch contact. And Ian sort of embraced that a little bit. And that's what I think we're going to see from him tonight. But don't get me wrong. Soto wasn't in the lineup the last time he was, you know, watching them face the Nationals. And like he said, he goes, that really changes the look. And heck yeah, it certainly does. So Juan Soto's just been so good for them, obviously. And there's a couple other guys that are dangerous. It's a dangerous lineup. And obviously the defending champs, these guys have a lot of pride despite the season having not gone the way they had intended. So he's got his hands full tonight for sure. But I think we see the Ian Anderson we saw the first two outings.
Last one for you, Kelly. I do want to ask you this, and kind of maybe taking the wider lens view of it. We've seen some, I'll call it peculiar baseball during this regular season. A lot more lopsided games, a lot more offense. But you know that usually when the playoffs happen, the pitching ramps up and things look a lot different. Do you see the postseason doing that when it comes to this year, or do you feel like the postseason this year might be more of an extension of the regular season and we see some more of those peculiarities and laughers come when the second season starts in October?
I really like that word, peculiar. That's
working into the broadcast tonight.
Kinds of bizarre things this year, which has made it, you know, though, I think we all, as baseball fans, kind of had, you know, we had set our expectations, right? We knew this was going to be a strange season. We knew we were going to see things we'd never seen before and probably won't ever see again. But we just wanted it so bad. And so in my opinion, it's just been fun. It's been such a blessing to have baseball and have these games every night. But, you know, it's funny you say that. Around the league, I should probably kind of take a closer look at how other teams have been able to rely on starters. I don't think starters across the league have been going as deep into games as what normally you'll see, right? By August and September, you've got your horses going 7, sometimes 8, sometimes, you know, full closing shutout games kind of thing. And we haven't seen a lot of that. But as far as, like, the Braves, in a way, I kind of was talking about this the other day with Chip and Jeff, just that they've almost been playing like playoff baseball, getting to their bullpen so early. I still think that is what we will see. So if they can just get their starters, 4 or 5 innings, and then you hand it over to what's been just a locked down, tremendous bullpen this year. I like the way the Braves are set up for the postseason. I really do. But you're right. The difference will be the pitching and how that plays out when they face, you know, some of these other juggernauts in the National League. I mean, I know, obviously, I still watch the Central very closely and the Cubs. They got a couple guys that are, you know, night in and night out going 6-7 innings. And Darvish has been the old Darvish of late, and so he'll certainly be a challenge if that's and we've seen what the Dodgers are doing as well. You get Kershaw, granted the postseason hasn't been where he's shined the most, but you still don't want to see him. You still don't want to see him in October. So, yeah, it will be interesting to see kind of how managers – try to navigate things in the playoffs with their starters not being as stretched out as they usually are. But we'll wait and see, and it will be peculiarly, can I use that word, fun?
Sure, sure.
We're going to go with it.
I'll be the first to tell you, Ronnie in the lineup for the Braves tonight, leading off.
Awesome.
Playing center field.
That's great,
so
news. Great news.
Love having you here. Love the opportunities that we've had to catch up. I look forward to doing it more. And also, yep, as we go throughout the offseason. Appreciate the time as always. Have a good call tonight with you, Birdie, Chip, and Frenchie.
Appreciate it. Thanks so much, guys. We'll have a great weekend.
You too. That's Kelly Kroll joining us here on the WadeFord.com hotline talking Braves. So, yeah, Acuna in the lineup tonight. Freddie hitting second. Marcel in the field. In left field. Yikes. Travis d'Arnaud DHing, Swanson, Riley, Duvall, Flowers, and Albies with Anderson on the hill tonight in D.C. Willie P. in the building, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com, and the radio.com app. That's what's happening with the Braves. We'll tell you what's happening across the Atlanta sports scene at the top of the 3 o'clock hour when we come back. Willie P. here with you on a Saturday, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and radio.com.